Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on this fine mid-June date of the 14th.
Yep. Thanks for that 10 count, by the way.
I've never done a 10 count.
And
why would you do a 10 count? You don't do 10 counts. You do like a four count. You go 4, 3, 2, 1, and you hit it.
Oh. You don't go checking, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3?
Well, you do that when you're trying to get your levels, but yeah.
Check. Anyway, how are you? How was your week?
Pretty boring.
Really?
The market was fun. It finally cracked down through 12,000, and of course, then it recovered.
Yeah, the market has a knack for loving round numbers. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
You know, one of the things that you do if you're, for example, if you're day trading, if a stock is trading, let's say at, pick a number, 1250, and let's say it starts moving up, and it has some resistance around 1280, 1290, you watch for that $13 range. Once it goes over the $13 range, if it finally cracks there, it shoots up a lot of times, and vice versa. If you have a stock that's at 1250 and it starts moving down and down and down, it may hover around that $12 area, and then just once it goes through that $12 area, usually it's a 20-cent clip right away.
Huh.
So one of the things people should know is when you set, if you ever do limits, stops on a position, always do it on an oddball number underneath or over a round number. So instead of being at 12, I'll stop at 12 because it'll blow right through you. You want to go at like maybe 1207. There could be support there. Or maybe 1192. Seriously. Because usually they'll come down, but then it'll move back up because it has a lot of people are on round numbers.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Not really.
Well, it would be if it was day trading.
Yeah.
I know a guy who couldn't get it work, so he went – he's a smart guy. Publishing type, and he's kind of eking out a living day trading.
You could do it. I mean, I know people that do it, and it. If you don't have high expectations of making, just a killing, if you're just trying to grind it out, you could definitely make money.
Yeah,
especially with this.
It's like a lot of work.
Yeah, well, it's
basically
a lot of stress.
Basically glued to a screen all day.
Right, and you got the position is glued to your screen, right hand on the mouse, index finger raised, ready to tap on the buy or sell button.
Hmm.
Always. Never take your finger off that mouse.
Yeah, it seems kind of a nerve-wracking. I don't have the personality for it.
Yeah. Well, there was 6 weeks down in the U.S. markets and in the European markets and around the world pretty much. And we thought maybe there was going to be a break coming. There was actually 2 days up out of the last 8 in the U.S., and that was today. One of the major day was today, where we saw better retail sales, better than expected, still terrible. We saw a benign PPI, which means that we're not having a producer, well, at least benign from the aspect of what it could have been, although the year over year was over 7%. 7% year over year PPI, producer price index. And China came out, and their inflation was 5.6%, right in line. And there was a few other things that looked okay, but again, it looked okay according to the comparison of estimates. You know how that goes, right?
Yeah. And then if you estimate one thing and it does it over or under, it seems to affect the outcome.
Right. Even though, you may have a really bad number baked in and it still comes out bad but not as bad, investors are happy. So our retail sales here were better but still lousy. The PPI was better but still much hotter, meaning that could be a sign of inflation. And there was a lot of short covering going on in the markets today. A lot of people have been short for a number of weeks. And when they saw that turnaround happen, there was a big move. And you can tell that because it was a violent move up for a lot of stocks on very little volume. So there was hardly any participation. And then you also had Bernanke speaking today, by the way, which always seems to have a little bit of an upside with the markets.
Yeah, I tried to listen to him, but he really didn't have much to say except that we need to have a higher debt ceiling.
Yeah, there is a conversation going on about whose side is this guy on. In other words, is he just trying to toe the political line at this point, or is he trying to make sense for the the long term outlook, or is he just scared as hell because if something goes wrong, all those bonds that he put out there are going to cost them a lot more money.
Well, I'm honestly of the opinion that because of his background, he was a student of the 29 crash, as was I, as a matter of fact. And he must have looked at all the I believe there's a bunch of guys who have looked at a lot of these at the business cycle over the years and the market cycle in particular. And I'm convinced he's familiar with the fact that in 1849, 1850, the market held up quite well when it should have probably crashed, and due to the fact that we injected a lot of free money into the scene, like trillions in what was then gold. You just dig it up, and there you just go outside and you pull up a rock, and now you can buy stuff.
I think that's what we should do, by the way. We should make lava rocks worthwhile.
You know, it would be the same thing if instead of giving the bankers all this money that they've got that they use for the TARP and the rest of it, they just gave it to the public. I think it would have probably helped. But I think he's also aware of the fact that the dollar amount that is actually necessary to prevent the economy from really tanking in the next few years is so high that it's not achievable because nobody would believe you needed that. You could get away with it. It would cause hyperinflation or they would have all these fears. And I think he's aware of that. So that's why I think he's a nervous wreck, because he knows that he can do QE3 maybe and get – but he's already at the limit of what people are going to put up with.
Can you imagine the stress that this guy has?
Yeah, I guess I can imagine. Well, I can't really imagine, but I can kind of imagine.
He's never right. Nobody. I mean, there's always somebody that's bitching about something. And, you know, he has – and he's made it this way that single-handedly looks like there's no one else that he works with. Right? If you think about it, it's like he's the guy. That's it. He goes in his office. He fiddles around with his computer, and he comes up with these numbers instead of a staff of hundreds and thousands, you know, all around the various feds in the country. But it looks like it's just him, doesn't it?
So it sounds like he doesn't seem to be crediting anybody with these thoughts.
Right. Does he ever reference anybody and say, you know, our team? Yeah,
he's like LeBron James.
Let's see. Let's hope that he doesn't poop out on the end.
I'm afraid.
Was that terrible?
You and the choke artist.
That was unbelievable. I mean, I watched that. I was like, wow. I don't usually, you know, I don't think I could necessarily tell if somebody lays off a little bit or not. Oh, he really laid off that last game, that last half of the last game.
In all the games, he crapped out in the fourth quarter. He only averaged, I think, because he scored a big 4 points in the last quarter in this game. His average number of points in all the final games was 3 points per every four quarters.
Amazing.
So, I mean, that's not right. But somebody came on and they said, you know, this guy was this way in high school. He was on the USA Olympic team. He was the same way. He just does not perform well. At the end of a game, he's a choker, and he needs to probably get counseling or something. I don't know.
Yeah, he could probably go in with Wiener to some kind of class about making better what they do in public. But anyway, I want to mention also Best Buy Beat. That stock has been in awful shape, all of the electronics deals. You know, I had a conversation with somebody.
You've been to a Best Buy recently, by the way?
I have, as a matter of fact.
I think they're kind of grimy.
What's better?
Nothing. That's the problem. They kind of had, you're a good point.
I mean, this H.H. Gregg, we don't have really many around here.
I haven't seen one.
Would you have like a Tiger Direct or the old CompUSA?
No.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have many choices on electronics. Is it Fry's? Do you have Fry's?
Yeah, we got Fry's, and Fry's is totally the best.
It's the best. Yeah, we don't have Fry's down here. But Best Buy, the question was, you know, Circuit City went out because they just, you know, there was not enough room in this marketplace for that many electronics firms. And let's not even talk about Radio Shack, whatever that company is. But the Best Buys that I've been in, first of all, you can't get help. They're always, it seems like, in transition between places, all the help. And, you know, it's I don't get the whole section with the DVDs and the CDs. It seems like an incredible waste of space.
You said you were talking to somebody?
No. So, yeah, I was talking to somebody about, they said, what's the point of Best Buy? What's the point of having any of these places except for going there and looking at what they have and buying it on Amazon?
Well, I actually, you know, people that run retail stores complain about this, tire kickers. I don't even bother doing that. I just buy it on Amazon. I skip that step.
I don't get the whole – I don't know how they're going to make it with the – and then they even talked about the competition and the coupon cycle is very, very difficult on them right now, and they see a lot more pressure coming. So, you know, they came out, they beat earnings, and the stock went up a bit, so that was good. And I'm just giving you all the things that kind of led up to why today rallied a bit. Japan put a mini stimulus plan out to counter some of the earthquake issues. It was, I think, only $6 billion. Only $6 billion. And they also did something interesting. They stopped and halted any short selling of TEPCO shares. Stock was up 24% yesterday, another 25% today.
Wow. That's been a nice one to pick up.
You know, that's the one you shorted for so successfully.
Yeah. But...
And they also are allowing them to raise rates.
So they're going to keep TEPCO in business.
Yep, it's on resuscitation.
Weird.
So that's what kind of went on last night. It was a very interesting night. And then after the close last night of the Chinese markets, and it was I think this was expected after looking at their numbers, they came in and tightened again by raising the bank reserve requirements because there is a big concern that they're going to have a hard landing due to all of the money that's been loaned out. They're really trying to squeeze the banks to hold back on their loans. Trying to learn.
Well, people in China are buying 2 and 3 homes.
Yeah, and outside the country because they're not allowed to buy more than a certain amount within the country.
Well, buying outside the country is probably a good thing.
Yeah, it'll help out the rest of us here. So we wrote a piece last week. I just gave you a link to that if you want to look at it at your leisure about how there was this oversold situation that was approaching. And I think that, you know, unless we see something very substantial out of Europe, I think there's going to be some continuing rockiness and bumpiness in these markets because they can't make up their minds what they want to do over there. And Germany and the ECB are not agreeing at all. Hmm. So we do have Research in Motion earnings coming out Thursday. Into the earnings, there's lots of downgrades happening. My wife has that new torch I think I told you about.
No, you didn't tell me she has one.
She has a torch. This is her first touchscreen phone that she's had. She's had the BlackBerries before. The battery does not last for anything. There's no way to do any very high-end battery saving. I went through all the menus. I couldn't find it.
What do you mean by – I mean if you're used to like a regular Nokia phone that, you know, that's without a touchscreen and the rest of it, the phone will go a week,
right?
You know, on standby, and you get used to that. I find that I use the Android phones. I had an Android 1 and an Android S is what I'm using now. And the Android 1 had a very short, very, very short battery. I mean, it was like within the day it was
right.
Dead. The newer one's a little longer, and you can turn a lot of features off, which keeps it going. So it can go a couple of days now.
Right. But this one lasts a good maybe half to a three quarters of a day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too
and
short.
And I've tried to turn off features.
You're not used to that, and you don't realize you had to keep that damn thing plugged in all the time.
Right, and I think that's just a very bad design, very bad design error. So here's the question: the stock is looking just absolutely awful. Would you buy the stock ahead of the earnings?
No.
You don't think they'll even come up with something remotely that is better than they're going out of business in the next few years?
Well, I think they have. They've done this before. It's a very cyclical stock. I mean, I've seen this thing hit rock bottom and then come back two or three times now over its life since I've been following it probably since when I first started hearing about it in 98. It was the rage. Everyone had to have a BlackBerry. It was a big thing in Silicon Valley to have one. And the stock was interesting to follow because it ran up and it ran way up before the 2000 crash, and it crashed and it came up again. It's been kind of like rocky recently. I don't know that. Unfortunately, I don't follow it close enough to know that maybe there's one guy in the company that was the brainiac that, you know, was key to the success of the company, and he's left. I don't know that that's happened or not happened. And I wouldn't trade the stock because I'm really not.
Yeah.
Although I've seen it do this over and over again. So, I mean, historically, I would say that if you can try to find the bottom here, it's going to, you know, something's going to happen. They'll come up with some idea, some new thing will take place, or they get bought, or, you know, it would be bought for some premium. I don't know.
I mean, this is one of those classic trading situations that there's so much bad news baked into this that from a trading standpoint, I'm not talking about a fundamental long-term buy. I'm talking about a trading situation that you could almost see how you can catch a couple of points, maybe even if the stock drops a little bit, you know, there's going to be some kind of support there somewhere if because people are just going to want to be, you know, out of this deal finally. They made some money on the down, and there's a lot of nervous short sellers out there probably about what's going to happen with earnings. Are they going to announce share buyback? Are they going to announce, you know, a new product line? Are they going to sell off something, change something, partner with somebody? So, and then you have all the things going against them, of course. Now you have Apple announcing that they're going to start selling their unlocked version of its iPhone 4 in the U.S. So that can't be good for RIM either.
No.
Nothing could be good for them.
But I'm looking at the long-term chart.
It goes from top left to bottom right, right?
Well, it's actually, I think the stock is, you know, it might be a good short. This stock really should be floating around $15, seems to me.
I mean, I don't see where the driver is for this at all. Plus, you know, you have a, here's another thing that's interesting. You have a lot of other options now in terms of, you know, you have these IPOs that are coming on the market. That's a lot hotter than the old smartphone, or not. It's not even smart. It's the intelligent phones. I can't call RIM a smartphone.
Feature phone. You
know? Yeah, feature phone. Yeah, feature phone plus. And there's a lot of things happening. As a matter of fact, now Facebook has been, we're going to hear a lot more grumbling about Facebook coming out with an IPO and their valuation. Did you see their recent valuation?
$100 billion. That one?
$100 billion. Do you realize that that would be at $100 billion total valuation?
It's bigger than most countries.
Yeah, they would. It is. They would be the number 26th company in terms of capitalization in the U.S., just below Pepsi and just above Cisco. Does that seem right? Maybe. I mean, I just doesn't.
Well, since it's something that seems to be attackable, it's only in existence with these high valuations because people like it at the moment, but it's a fickle audience. I don't know. Doesn't seem – it seems dumb. I mean, I can't –
it's not the kind of thing you want to bet against, but it does seem –
No, I wouldn't bet against it at the short term, but I mean, I would keep an eye on it. It's one of those things that, like, we've been watching, you know, like
LinkedIn?
Netflix and these other companies. LinkedIn. Well, LinkedIn is already sliding, but you mean these companies that are just doing so well that – doesn't really make a lot of sense because they don't have anything proprietary going on except their mailing list.
Right. And that everybody loves them. That's important.
Yes. Everybody loves them and they have a big mailing list and they have nothing else going on.
Right. But then we have on the other side, continuing on this whole discussion of IPOs, we have Pandora Media. You know that, the Pandora Radio.
Yeah.
They're coming out, I think they're coming out Friday, and they just priced this evening. So listen to this. They're the quote-unquote leading internet radio company, right? With 94 million registered users. Now, let's just break this down. What does that mean?
Well, it doesn't really mean much.
Right. Exactly, right?
It means 94 million people supposedly signed up.
I signed up. I never use it.
Okay.
I'm one.
Well, you're
so take
one.
Me off.
I never signed up, so I'm not one. And I mean, this, again, sounds like a repeat. Remember Broadcast.com?
That was, wasn't that?
Mark Cuban. That's how Mark Cuban made. He walked away with $3 billion in his pocket when he bought the basketball team and has been kind of doing that in HDTV ever since. Or HDNet, that early HDTV stuff. And meanwhile, whatever happened to Broadcast.com that Yahoo dropped $3 billion on?
Yeah, bad move. Now, they're going to raise this. Pandora is going to be raising $162 million by offering about almost 15 million shares, right? And the original price range was somewhere around 7 to 9. Then they upped it to about 10 to 12. And tonight they priced it at 16.
Really?
16.
Well, 16 is a pretty common price for an IPO.
Yeah, it's a little over 15. It's not. It's like, you know, it's like Walmart's 488.
Yeah, right. Something like that.
So they're about 60% over. The capitalization of the company is going to be close to $3
billion. Wow.
It had $167 million in sales for the last 12 months. $167 of sales, which is not a whole heck of a lot for a $2 billion company. So
no,
this is going to come out.
Stock, I mean, it should be a company worth at the most $300 million, it seems to me.
So tell me what the difference between this company and Sirius Radio is.
Well, one of them's on the internets, and the other one's on a satellite, which is a high maintenance. Well, there's a couple of things. For one thing, anyone can get Pandora. You can do it on, if you have a computer, you can listen to these podcasts, broadcasts, whatever you want to call them.
But not all of them. You can only see a certain amount of them. You can't get it all for free.
What, Pandora?
There's only certain. Yeah, I think there's a certain amount you can get, like three or four songs, and then there's something
else.
The rest
of it you have to pay for?
Yeah, either subscription or you have to sign up. I don't know. It's something that's totally free.
Well, okay. I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that XM Radio, Sirius, whatever they're calling it, the combination company, I think it's a more complex, old-fashioned model that doesn't warm the hearts of investors because it has no place to go.
Right.
And it's a subscription model, needs special hardware. You know, this thing you can – yeah, okay, it's a subscription model, but it doesn't need special hardware by any means.
Yeah, but what's the difference of Pandora Radio so you listen to your favorites versus the new iCloud, Amazon Music? I don't see where the real excitement is here, except – I mean, they don't – so you build your own radio station.
You're talking to a guy who doesn't even have a subscription to the thing.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, it's so interesting. I know people that like it, but I don't know where this is.
Ask them why they like it. What do they like it? What's so special about that they like it?
I think it's one of those background in the office kind of things. Hmm. You know, when people listen in office, they turn on Pandora, they can just listen to some stuff. It's on their iPad or iPhone or whatever. Anyway, they're going to be listed under the symbol P. Now,
P?
I don't
they
know
got
how,
P?
They got P.
Wow.
That's amazing, huh?
Yeah.
Usually these new – companies are NASDAQ, and they have multiple symbols, you know, multiple letters
usually
with them.
Four.
Yeah, usually. Although that recently changed. There was some rule that changed. It was two, one and two on the New York, but they changed that recently. So anyway, they got the symbol P. So if you want to – this is what I do.
What was P before?
I have no idea.
It P. had to be something. I mean
– like a Parker Hannifin maybe or a I don't know. What you do is to know when it comes out. If you have some kind of an alert system, whether you use maybe a Yahoo Finance or something, whatever you use for alerting a stock price, you put in P and you say when it goes above $1, alert me. This way you know when the thing starts trading.
Yeah, it's so a great tip. You mentioned that before. It's a great idea. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, the reason why they raised it to 16 is because obviously it was – oversubscribed, and I believe it's also going to be a thinly issued deal. So they're going to try to pump it up a bit. We'll see what happens with that. But it's a really
like
hot
a short to me.
Yeah, don't worry, I have it on the list for you already.
Well, I don't think we're short it right off the shoot.
Right. So and then the China stocks, by the way, just to kind of come full circle on this discussion with the reverse mergers that we've talked about months ago. We started talking about this months ago. Now, the SEC has banned hundreds of stocks from being their listings, and some companies
Why?
Are actually – because they say they can't prove their finances.
You're talking about the small penny stocks that are used for the reverse merger? They can't prove their finances? What difference does it make? It's a penny stock.
They don't want them trading. They think that there may be some fraud in their they want to see
proof.
Oh,
that's why they pumped the price up to a penny? These fraudsters.
Yeah. Oh, it could be. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The best they can do.
Yeah. Well, it's not only the penny stocks, but it's the ones that like Heat and Rhino and all these other ones. Now, there's a couple brokerage houses out there that are not letting you to. You're not like some of them can't short, but you can't use any leverage at all with these. You can't use any margin with them at all.
Well, they're probably doing the public a favor.
Yeah. And the stock that you picked last week, that Sinoforest.
Yeah.
So it went up like 25%.
Yeah.
It was down 35% today.
Wow.
Yeah. They came out with their earnings, and they came out with a discussion on how to combat or they were trying to combat the short sellers, which obviously didn't work. Right? They were close to their revenues, but there was all sorts of little ditties in here. But I thought this was I read their report. This was really interesting. They had this little ditty on their earnings statement. They said, as the share prices decrease of our stock, the equity convert option, they have some kind of convertible option, becomes less valuable, less costly to the company, and therefore results in a gain being recorded on the income statement. So they had something like $450 million of gains on their statement because the stock went down, making the earnings look really good.
Oh, interesting little trick.
Yeah. So I wonder if the short sellers knew that kind of situation was going to happen.
Interesting. Yeah.
32% this week. What else is going on your end? Shoes. You want to talk about shoes?
That's your kind of your specialty, and unbeknownst to the you should actually have a shoe newsletter.
Yeah. Shoes by Andrew. VF Corp bought Timberland this week. Timberland shoes?
Yeah. Familiar with them. The
Claude for a very hefty, very hefty premium.
Well, they're hefty shoes.
Yeah. So all the shoe companies are getting, you know.
Oh, so they're all thinking about, interesting.
Yep. Yeah. Who's going to buy the next one? You know, who's the next buyout candidate? So the shoe companies really, you know, between Deckers and Crocs and, you know, Steve Madden, you know, everybody's getting all excited about these now. Who's the next shoe company to be bought?
Skechers.
Ah, yeah. I mean, who would buy them? I don't know.
They got a nice little retail operation.
Ah, it's, I think that Nike and a few others have a better deal than them. Maybe they'll come up with something new again.
You mean like the shoe with no heel that roll around on it?
I was going to say the Heelys. Those are cool. They actually have things that you can clip into now with those Heelys. It's like a skateboard. You can clip in your shoe into it.
No, I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, so you can make like you can clip into like a skateboard thing with those shoes.
You ever see, you know, kids? There's not that many kids that use those shoes. I mean, I've never seen an adult with a pair. They have the wheels on them,
mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing. You'll see some kid, and then he'll click on it. You know, he'll kick his heel back to catch that wheel, and he just goes sliding down the just go like a mile a minute just down the aisle of a store or something. It's actually quite frightening.
Yeah, and it's like he's floating by.
Yeah, zoom, there he goes.
So this week on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, we have Harry Dent. Remember him?
Oh, yeah. He's the one that predicted the economic collapse of 2009.
Yeah, and the subsequent depression that's supposed to start.
He missed that part of it.
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet. He said, I think I want to follow up because I haven't talked to him in a while about this. And I know that last we talked, you said the summertime, I think it was this summer, was going to be the time where things were going to really get ugly.
This summer? So
I believe it was. I don't think it was last summer. I think it was this summer. You know, the whole implosion of the European situation and all, it was coming soon.
Yeah.
We've
heard that before.
Yeah. Hey, what do you make of all this? I'd like to get your opinion on this because I think you probably follow this. What's your opinion with all this data breaches and this cyber terrorism? And what's the story?
I think it's just about publicity. This is nothing new. It's been going on for a while. There's we have a owner's theory that we discuss on the No Agenda show, which says that there's been a concerted effort, and you can catch evidence of this here and there, that the FCC in particular wants to regulate the internet because they haven't got enough to do in some way that would require all kinds of licensing and IP registration and all kinds of things that just keep tabs on everything in such a way that I think it's just, to be honest about, just for revenue generation. And to get to that point, you have to scare the public and make the internet seem unsafe. And so these data breaches are cropping up all over the place.
So you don't think any of the breaches are – you don't think that Sony or the IMF or – you think that's all BS?
I think the IMF one is slightly BS. I think there is a concerted effort to attack Sony. Somebody's got a grudge against Sony and probably have tried to extort Sony, I'm guessing. Because it looks like an extortion scheme gone, you know, toward the extortionist pulling the string on the plan, on the scheme. You know, give us your money or this is going to happen, and boom, they do something, and then give us your money or something bad is going to happen again, and they don't. Sony's kind of a company that won't, you know, they're maybe oblivious to it. I'm just assuming that this actually is going on. So I think there's definitely – I don't know who it is. I mean, all these groups kind of deny it, and every once in a while somebody says that they're behind it, but there's no evidence of it. I don't know. I don't know who's behind it. I think it's some mob.
I mean, the IMF. Well, do you know –
what did they get from the IMF? What does the IMF have that these guys would break into their system to get?
I mean, maybe the date book from that guy. I mean, maybe they could find the – economic policies.
Anthony Weiner pictures, for all we know.
Yeah. What do you find it interesting that this all started to really come up after the Osama bin Laden assassination, killing, death?
I think it started before that. The Sony thing did, for sure. It started before the bin Laden thing.
I don't know. So what are they getting from Sony? They're getting usernames and emails?
Well, they did that. There was the second. The first breach was just bringing down the system. Mm-hmm. So you're done. You can't operate anymore. And so they, they tried to fix it, or they were fixing it. And then they said, well, hey, we got another trick for you. And then they stole all their data with the second attack. And then they started attacking sub areas. The little Sony has servers around the world doing something different things, and they're attacking them one by one. I don't know. Sony's is targeted.
Yeah, they're definitely targeted. Yeah,
and they're not telling anybody why. People and security experts all say that Sony security stinks. And
apparently, I always had the impression that the security companies, have a lot to benefit.
Yeah,
from these breaches.
I totally agree. I'm always worried that one of these guys is going to get caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and turns out that they're doing the attacking.
Right. Because every time it happens, these companies become, it's very good for them, and everybody starts saying, wait a minute, let's check our, from a service standpoint and from a programming standpoint. You got to bring in people to make sure that everything is tightly locked down, that any of the new codes and any of the new maybe any port that may be open needs to be closed. I mean, you need somebody from a compliance standpoint to make sure that everything is locked down good, right?
Yeah, and you need people that know what they're doing, and there's only a handful in the country. But they're available, for work. Most of the time they're sitting around in their home offices, watching porn.
Yeah, until they, of course, they hack into somebody's system, and then...
Yeah, most of them don't do that. I mean, it's pretty rare. Because you
but
bring,
they watch
you
porn.
Bring, you, well, they probably don't. I hate to demean them by saying that, but it's probably true. You get a good security guy in there that can start digging around, and you're going to get caught. So that I don't think these security guys, at least the big shots, the good ones, are doing any sort of surreptitious attack, and they'd have to be way, way confident that they could get away with it.
Right. So there's big doings over at JCPenney today. Did you catch the story at all? What's going on?
I don't know. No, I know the stock jumped, and
what happened was that
they got a new Apple guy as a CEO or something.
Yeah, this guy Ron Johnson, who is credited for the design and marketing, and the unbelievable marketing genius of Ron Johnson. He was the retail head for Apple, and now he's going to be the CEO of JCPenney, and he got a nice piece of change to hop on board. I think $50 million in JCPenney stock plus a couple of or so million dollars a year of salary.
Well, if he is able, and I actually question this, if he is able to take his skill set, which was a collaborative effort, there was a lot of people involved in these stores, and including Steve Jobs himself saying yes and no to things, because I'm sure somebody must have ran by those glass stair steps. Mm-hmm. I've been to these stores, they got a glass stairway. It's like made out of this thick glass, and somebody had to run that past Jobs. I mean, because I could just see most CEOs saying, no, we're not doing that, we can't afford it, it's stupid. And as opposed to Jobs, would say, we need, or who may have actually suggested it because it's cool, and which is
he would say it, but no corners, no sharp edges,
stuff like that. So anyway, so this Johnson guy apparently, was the put the finishing touches on everything and actually set up the mechanism within the store, how the store works, where the cash registers are. The mechanics of the store itself, things like that. It would be interesting, but we're dealing with a store system developed by Apple that really appeals to a really specific demographic. And I would say, just off the top of my head, that is not the JCPenney demographic.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we're talking about Apple, which has How many square feet are the, even the big store? I mean, 5,000 square feet?
I don't know. There's that a couple of the stores that have been cropped up recently are big.
Right, but still,
but, yeah, it's not the same, right? You know, JCPenney's is a monster.
And they have how many products? How many products does Apple really have?
I mean, minimum.
Five products?
A variation on five lines, maybe, something like
right.
that.
Right, and everything is related to those products?
Yeah, the software is, yeah. It's very targeted.
Very targeted. It's like one section of JCPenney. One little section. You know, it's like the men's suit section. I mean, you have suits, you have shirts, you have ties, you have, you know, maybe you have, it's a whole different thing. Now, the stock jumped 17% on this.
Yeah.
Now, the thing I find really interesting is the transition from Apple, I mean, what are they really thinking that this gent is going to do? I am certain that he is brilliant at marketing and at retail. I have no question about that. And I'm sure that he's going to come in there, you know, with sleeves rolled up, ready to change things, because that's what they do, right? New CEOs change things. The question, though, is from a department store standpoint, I mean, what is going to be sexy, different, you know, and how much of a change can you make in a brick and mortar, a multi-itemed store? I mean, you're still going to have the cooking department, I guess. You're going to have your clothing department. And you, I mean, how much different are we talking about here? Is it going to be an inventory issue? Is it going to be a buying issue? Is it going to be a full redesign of stores? I mean, the cost factors are going to be enormous to do that.
Yeah, it's going to hurt them. I think that this is – well, we have to do a little research into this Ron Johnson character. First, does he have – what's his previous experience to Apple? Is he good at generalized stores? Did he do Talbots? Or, I mean, was he involved with some mall stores in the past as, you know, either a designer, CEO, architect, or what? I don't know. And then once you can kind of put your finger on it, maybe the Apple thing was just a lark. It was a small potatoes concept for him, and he needed a big store, and he's just going to, you know, rethink the way JCPenney's operates. Personally, I haven't been to a Penny's within the last year or two, but, you know, they haven't changed much. But you go into the big JCPenney store at a mall, and I don't see the difference between the Penny's and the Macy's and the other, you know, kind of similar stores in these malls. I don't know what you could do that would make the experience any, you know, more compelling. You're just basically going in there to buy underwear or a shirt or a sweater or, you know, mm-hmm. maybe a pot or some cheap junk jewelry, depending. I mean, I don't see that you have to create – I mean, what are you going to do? Put a disco dance pole in there, some dancers, maybe have some music playing, have a – you know, a circus kind of thing with people, you know, performing overhead. I mean, I don't know.
Well, let me just give you some background here. So he started with Apple in 2000 as a senior vice president, and he reporting directly to Steve Jobs. And he was in charge of the retail strategy and responsible for the overall execution performance. Now, he opened 300 stores under his leadership. And before that, he was the various management positions at Target. He was most recently, and just prior to 2000, the vice president of merchandising for Target stores. And he had a very successful period of growth at Target and developing new initiatives, branding, marketing, and all that. So he was with a, we'll call it a department store style. I mean, it was, you know, that was before. That was, I think that was when actually Target evolved from the Dayton Hudson, wasn't it?
That's possible. He may be the guy, and this would be reflected in the Apple stores, who took took a really interesting tact with Target. I've always been fascinated with Target. Target, as we like to call it if you want to be pretentious. They hire very high-end designers who do expensive products for boutique stores. And they say, look, we're going to give you a flat fee and maybe a piece of the action, but you're going to design that, you know, that toaster you did for so-and-so. We want you to design a toaster for us that is high design and cheap to manufacture in China, but it's got to have some taste. And so they have a bunch of very tasteful products at Target that are high taste. I mean, it's hard to say this because I have a Target down the street here, and I go there every once in a while. And every once in a while, I run into a bunch of Frenchmen shopping there. It's almost like, I guess it's like a CNA or some of these French stores Galleries Lafayette or whatever, where they have there's actually enough element of taste in some of the simple things they sell that Europeans are attracted to the place. And I'm impressed. So if he had anything to do with that, he could take JCPenney and up the ante and move it up that, because Macy's doesn't do that. Macy's just has a lot of high end stuff. They'll bring in some designer stuff and they'll sell it at a very high price. And it's really all about the buyers. It's not about creating your own line of product.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm looking right now at his comp over at Apple, and he has restricted stocks awarded to him, and those were awarded. Let's see when this was. Less than a year ago, 9/21 of 2010. Of $28 million. And he made $700,000 a year in salary. And number of value of, I don't, they say he can actually exercise it. It looks like he may be able to, he has options too. He has $102 million worth of options that are available to be exercised. Hmm. Nice.
Yeah, that guy's on easy street. He doesn't have any impetus to do anything.
He got
no motivation. You hired a guy that's not motivated anymore.
He got 1.2 million shares at 47.
Wow.
Yeah, that's nice.
So that's like $200 million.
This is
300 million bucks. It's He's got basically $300 million in his pocket.
That's not bad. I mean,
and he's picking up another 50 to go over to Tari or to JCPenney.
Yeah, he must be losing something. He must be losing some of this, though. That's why they give him so much.
Maybe.
Obviously. Maybe. So what? So then, what's his incentive to do well?
I don't see it.
Right?
I don't see it. I can see him going in there and saying, "Well, I'll make a few changes." I think it's going to be a lack. I mean, just based on the fact that he's so wealthy. He's going to go over there. I mean, what's the point of, he's going to go over there and he's probably make a few minor changes, kind of push it toward a target model, bring in some stuff that's cool and be able to promote it and then relax. He's probably not going to make any big, he's not going to shake up. I don't believe he's going to go over there and shake things up.
This is good. This is from Business Insider. This is, I guess it was today. It says, this is great. So they say, why is he leaving? Why? Well, it's not because he needs money or has a bad job or anything. But it sounds like he's doing it for sport because this is what he always wanted to do, and it's big, a new challenge. He says, this is his quote, "I've always dreamed of leading a major company as a CEO, and I'm thrilled to have this opportunity to help JCPenney reimagine what I believe to be the single greatest opportunity in American retailing today, the department store." He has a real confidence in them. And then this guy, the person who wrote this article, says, "As they say, once you're lucky, twice you're good. Johnson could already retire as one of the greatest minds in retail, but if he can turn around JCPenney as well as he's built Apple's retail empire, he'll be even more of a legend."
Yeah, well, maybe he's going for the legend moniker. Mm. Could be.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Nice. I like it.
We'll see. Well, it won't hurt.
Right.
I mean, maybe it will. Maybe he'll mismanage everything. He's not a CEO type. He's an idea guy.
Right. Right. Well, listen, if he's doing it for the sport, that's great. I think it's great. I mean, if he could do it, it's going to be pretty cool. But here's the question. 17% pop on the stock. That, first of all, that's pretty – I hope he got his – I wonder if he got a stock prior. That would be good. Then he already got an up on the stock that he got from JCPenney.
Hmm.
Very nice. So anyway, we'll save my comments on if the 17% is really – something that is a reasonable thing after we saw a same store sales that was not very impressive, and with the fact that retail is really slumping a little bit overall. So
yeah,
I don't care
I'm looking at the Penny stock, JCPenney stock right now, and it was headed south. It was headed down to 20, and I would say conservatively, and it popped. This may be a short. I might put this on this week.
You can't.
What do you mean I can't?
I have it already.
Oh.
We could do it. Could we do this one together?
Why not?
Yeah, we could do that. We could do it. We never did that before.
Well,
something we both agreed on.
Yeah, we'll just put it as a see if we can put stripes there for the gray.
Yeah, I'll put something different, some other strange color.
Green.
So So I was reading, you know, you start sometimes read these crazy little articles. It seems that watching television, which is America's most popular daily activity after sleeping, can raise the risk of diabetes, heart disease, and premature death when you do it for too long, according to an analyst of
study.
Yep. Sleeping is not good for you, nor is watching TV. So for every 2 hours of TV viewing, the risk of type 2 diabetes increased 20%. The risk of cardiovascular disease rose 15%, and the risk of early death rose 13%, according to a report published today in the Journal of American Medical Association. Now, first of all, you got to wonder. You know, this is the old, hey, if you're alive, you have a good chance of dying.
Yeah.
So
I have to look at this.
What I think is great, though, it didn't mention podcasts. I'm thinking that could be actually good for your health.
Yeah, you know, I think so. Maybe a study should be done.
I think they were intimating that. That's kind of a read between the lines kind of thing.
You need to find some really old podcast listeners that go on and on and go into their hundreds listening to these things.
Oh, boy. Okay. What else do we have here? I want to talk about your article that you recently wrote. I think it just popped up today or yesterday on Chromebook, but I want to mention that Europe is getting closer to what we'll call G-Day. G-Day is Greece needs more money. You know, did you see they were downgraded last week to Triple C?
Isn't that unbelievable?
That's it. You don't get any lower than that. That's junk. It's you don't see many bonds of companies at that level.
I wonder what interest pays on it, or what the payout on those things was.
It's like 20. It's 20 something percent.
All you have to do is go 5 years, and you got to get your money back.
Yeah, if they make it 5 years, because Germany now, Germany doesn't want to default. There's tremendous problems, obviously, with default, and that is that the banking system in Europe holds a tremendous amount of these bonds. You also have, obviously, countries in the EU and Germany who sported up all sorts of money to get this thing going. But Germany is saying that, hey, you know what? We think that the private investors should take some of the pain here. So the banks and any other investors, excluding, let's say, sovereign investors, countries, we think that they should take some pain as well. Now, the problem with that is if you do mandate that there is a private investor that takes some kind of a cut, it will be probably seen as a default.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, exactly. So on the other hand, I question, and tell me what you think about this, why shouldn't private investors get a haircut on this? And if they don't get a haircut on this, what's the point of investing? You just exclude all the risk.
I don't think they should take it back. Well, I mean, yeah, but there are certain kinds of investments that are supposed to be safe.
Okay, but they're not. So you shouldn't have invested there.
No, but I'm just saying it's municipal bonds is not supposed to be a risk. It's not like some speculator who's like shaking the dice in Reno.
Yeah, but you know what? If you did your homework and you looked at the municipality and their ability to pay their bills, I'm writing a piece on this for our next quarterly report. If you look at what's happening, the amount of new issues with municipal bonds is not keeping up with what's about to come due, and they're not going to be able to pick up all the money, and they don't have the revenue to cover their budgets. So you need to be aware. Meredith Whitney's all over this saying there's going to be tremendous defaults within the next year on munis.
Yeah,
and if that's
I'd have to see it to believe it.
Well, if it does happen, theoretically, if it does happen, do you think that investors, private investors, should get hit or somehow made whole by some magic?
Well, technically, they should get hit.
Right.
But at the same time, why do bankers get off the hook and why does these guys get bailed out?
Right, because the problem is that it would create massive problems for the governments. It all comes back to the same thing. The same thing is the governments are going to have to pick up the pieces. So they'd rather just inject the money into Greece that way, not cause a financial panic, and at the same time have the banks get off scot-free. That way it doesn't seem as bad.
I'm liking the looks of these Greek bonds.
I think we should get some of these.
Well, there's this one of this. I'm looking at this thing's like through the roof.
Yep. You're talking about the yield.
Yeah, the yield. I mean, the price is down in the ground. It's digging a hole.
Right. I am sure that if you want to buy these, there are several people that would be willing to sell them to you.
Is there any ETAs or anything that would kind of...
I mean, I'm sure we could find something. ETFs,
I mean, it might be...
I don't think I know of a Greek bond ETF. I just don't think...
speculation ETF.
Yeah, the Souvlaki special. I don't know of those. I'm sure there's something out there, but nothing that would be... There's probably a closed-end fund out there, and I'm sure it trades at a significant discount.
Yeah, I would hope.
I would think so. Hmm. Tell me about this whole Chromebook discussion. You know, I think...
I believe that was in MarketWatch.
Yeah, tell me about what you think. Tell everybody what it is and what's going on.
Chromebook is idiotic. At least it's my opinion. It's a laptop that doesn't have an operating system, except it has the Google Chrome operating system, which is kind of a hyper-modern operating system that uses the internet. It has to be online to even work. And the idea is you can save the $40 that you'd have to pay Microsoft for an operating system, and you don't have a hard disk or anything that costs another $10. And, you know, through all this process of saving $60 or whatever that you save... And I point out in the article that I have a machine, it's a DM1 or whatever it is from HP, which is pretty nice little 11-inch loaded machine. This thing sells for $450, and the Chromebook sells for about $450. It doesn't do anything except go online, and you can do Google Docs and some of these other things. And the fact that they think somebody's interested in this sort of thing, I mean, I'm sure it's cool at some level, but it's impractical. That's the real problem. And it would be, and
I mean, everything's cloud based, right?
Yeah, and I believe it would be a reasonable thing to own if it was $99 or $79 or something like that. But it's not going to be. And it's silly not to go on with what we've been doing. I mean, it just makes no sense. It's just like every other little thin client idea that's come along. They turn out to cost just as much. You could build a computer with a hard disk and, you know, a regular processor and some memory in it. And that's all you're taking out, really, is the hard disk. And hard disks, I mean, you can buy right now, you can walk over across the street and buy a terabyte for $65. I mean, you can get a 300 gigabyte hard disk for nothing. So you take those items out, and then you sell the thing for about the same price, and it's useless. It's just this whole model has been tried and tried and tried, and no one's ever cashed in on it, and they never will because it's stupid.
Why not just – why use the Chrome operating system versus Android?
Well, that's a question I asked in the column too, and I'm not absolutely sure why. They pretty much targeted that. They're putting all the development work into Android into small platforms, phones and pads, and – the Chrome, I think, is optimized for these web apps, and the Android's not.
I don't get it. Let me just say that.
Okay.
I just don't get the whole Chromebook thing. I don't get it. I don't understand.
Just what I'm trying to point out in the article. I think that's stupid. It's a dumb idea. I don't even know why maybe it's just an experiment, a Google experiment. They do it all the time. Not sure.
Maybe they're doing it for the sport as well.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Or if somebody actually thinks this thing's going to be a winner, maybe there's two or three guys there. I know it'll be a winner. I'm sure of it. I think they're smoking something.
I don't understand why it may be a prototype for something that will come eventually, and that's something that I do agree that there is. It's going that direction. Although every single time we see something about hacking and getting into the servers, and we talked about the security issues, you know, you start scratching your head about the cloud.
I mean, Google itself had a calendar went out on a lot of people. And there's no backup for Google Calendar. You can't back up all the stuff on there. I've never seen an export function. And the thing goes down, then nobody, and some people lost their calendars, and you know, what do they do now?
Right. There's definitely, we have a little ways to go until we can go fully backwards to, you know, a dumb terminal, if you will,
right?
Which that's what this is.
Yeah.
And I don't really understand.
Now, why would you pay so much for a dumb terminal? I mean, not only that,
there's some things that the dumb terminal. For example, Google, the Excel Google Docs spreadsheet thing is very nice. It's excellent. We use it, but it's limited. it's limited of what it could do. And then there's also back to the privacy concern issues of what you're going to put in there. Anyway, you want to talk about some of the stocks here?
Yeah, let's take a look.
Let me get over there to the documents. And we do – actually, we keep these lists of the stocks that we talk about in a Google Doc because it does have – they call it – what do they call it here? Mnemonics that link up directly to Google Finance. So you can actually put this information if you figure out how to code it. It's very easy. And you can track your portfolios there or get all sorts of fundamental data on stocks. That's a whole bunch of things there. So I thought that was it's a really great way to do it. And then you could actually share it.
Blast them now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Anyway, so we're back to seeing shorts actually pick up a little bit here.
It's about time.
Yeah. So those are starting to really move up. You have that General Motors is a beautiful thing. I mean, just because it's, you know, it was so worked up as such a great thing. But so far, the things that the government has owned have really just flopped afterwards in terms of the stocks.
Yeah.
AIG, General Motors. But anyway, things are hobbling along. Actually, I'm pretty surprised that many of these names stayed on the list, considering the drop in the markets in the last 6 weeks. A lot of stocks off 10, 15, 20%, but we pretty much stayed pretty solid here.
Yeah, we got some stuff from September that hasn't been kicked off.
Yep, amazing. And let's see here. GE is the short actually kicked in. We'll see how that plays out. There was actually, they're big in the wind turbines for wind energy, and China just put the kaplot on that whole thing. They're canceling all their wind energy. Camac Energy is continuing its trend,
which is starting to look like a buy in the real world.
Yeah. But Novo Nordisk, hold it on.
If it goes down anymore, you're going to have to pull it off this list. It's embarrassing me.
Okay. Now, back to this, because I do think this is interesting. The ARM, the ARM Holdings, which makes the ARM chips for mostly mobile, and Intel.
Yeah.
Intel's down 7% compared to ARM being up 2%. I think that's saying something there.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm glad we did that because it's a good little thing to watch. But Intel just is too big.
Yeah,
it's just a big company, and they can't. You know, there's semis are just not on fire. I mean, ARM
and the PC market is going through a very tough time right now. And Intel has much more of the PC market, or laptop, et cetera, you know, versus the mobile market, which ARM is much more conducive for.
Yeah. Neither one are lighten it up.
No, but you know, you got them right when the market started really rolling over here, so it's not the worst thing in the world. Let's see what else we have here. Crocs, Bridgepoint. This is interesting. Silver, after we talked about this, came down about close to 10%, or actually close to about 7%. Today it went up out of nowhere. It just started going up. And so the short on silver actually reversed a little bit, but that's still up about 4.5%. Your friend finder short is fantastic. I love that.
Yeah, and I really missed the if I'd known it when it came out, I would have done this earlier. I would have been way up. I'm up on LinkedIn too. All these things are dogs.
Yep. So do you want to at least have Pandora Music on the list and maybe wait to a certain point?
Yeah, I think it's going to run up.
Okay, so do you want to do a time-based issue?
Oh, I could do a long and then do a short. If I want to be a gambler, it's not, you know, we're not really.
Whatever you want. Whatever you want.
Well, let's go long on Pandora and then hit a short next on the next show. We'll give it a week.
Okay, so here's the question. You're going to go long on this, okay? And I just want to kind of throw out what, you know, how it's going to work. So if it comes out at 16, it may actually come out at, let's say, I'm just giving you a number, 20. I'm just picking that number, okay? So we're going to buy it as soon as it hits the market?
No, we're going to pretend that I'm getting the stock from as a friends and family.
No, I don't think so.
Oh,
come on. That's totally not fair.
Oh, it's possible.
Okay.
We hit it the first. Okay, here's what we're going to do then. Okay, we'll do it your way.
What do you mean my way?
You're not going to let me cheat.
No, okay.
Okay. We're going
to
first sale in.
Okay, so it's on the opening.
Opening
market.
I think it's probably going to hit 18 right away and then pump up to 22 and then kind of float up there. And then I think within a few days, it'll start coming down.
Okay, so we'll have the same 10% stop in, of course.
Yeah.
And then are you going to put in a an automatic reversal here?
Yeah. Can we do that?
So yeah, we can. We can do whatever we want. It's a game.
Yeah,
that's
let's do
right.
an automatic reversal. When that thing starts sliding, boom, we're out of it. We're going the other way.
Okay, so as soon as let's think what I'm how
I know
do.
As soon as we sell it, as soon as this short, as soon as the 10% kicks in, then we go short. How's
okay,
that?
Okay, so yep, okay, short as soon as 10% stop hits. Okay, I got it in. So let me just copy this down. And there we go. And you're going to go short on this one. Copy. And we'll paste that there. Okay. Again, this is all available on if you go to DH Unplugged, there's a link at the bottom of each episode that says, hey, check out the stocks that we talked about and kind of that we're having fun with. It is a game. It's for fun. We're not recommending buying or selling. You know this. Right, everybody knows this.
And half of these things we probably couldn't execute if we wanted to.
Well, you can execute the long, but you wouldn't be able to probably execute the short.
A lot of the shorts that we have are probably not doable.
Yeah, some of them aren't. I agree. I'm going to short, actually, JCPenney.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, so we're going to have to make this some kind of fun.
Well, I think it has to be where it says John's pick. It should be joint pick.
Joint. Combined. Combined minds. Combined pick.
Which is the first time we've ever done that.
Yeah. And we'll make this a real horrible color.
I think it's some brown or something.
Pink or something. Or yeah, brown one may not show. I'm going
to
go, oh, this
really
is good.
Light color.
I think this is
yellow.
I think this is a fuchsia.
Fuchsia.
Purple.
Very, really light purple.
Oh, yeah, it has to be light purple. That's really ugly. Oh, it's horrible.
Perfect.
Okay, so we're going to do that. And yeah, there it goes. Oh, there's obnoxious purple. Perfect. A combined pick. So that's the purple one. Yeah, we're going to go short that, thinking that what has happened in this market condition is if it's up one day, it's oftentimes overdone and then comes back a little bit. So we'll see what happens with this.
And if this guy executes what you know does what he wants to execute, it's going to cost the company a lot of money. They're going to have some bad quarters in there.
You would think so.
Yeah, and then people are going to forget about him, and they're just going to look at the numbers, and the things should be yeah. This is probably, I'd say, 6 months from now, I think we'll be in the green.
In the green, yeah. The other thing I want to mention is that, you know, in between the time of our last show and now, the NASDAQ and the Russell 2000 actually went negative for the year.
Oh.
They were up close to 10% for a little while there. Hmm. And the S&P is only up about 2%, and it was just teetering on just up 1% after being up, I think, 8 or 9 for the year. I think that was a pretty substantial move down, and a lot of it is, you know, about not only the things that are going on around the world, but the lack of money that will be coming from the Fed, at least from what we know at this point.
Yeah, that could change. That'd be if that changes, our shorts are going to be screwed.
Yep, everything. You know, everything goes the other way, and who knows how they're going to do it or why they're going to do it.
Although we're high enough on some of these that the 10% thing will kick in, we won't actually lose anything.
Right, exactly. So that's all I got. Let me just do save here. Okay, so that will be updated tomorrow. Again, go over to DH Unplugged. And just as a point of reference and mentioning it again, this is a game. We don't recommend buying or selling of any of these without proper investigation on your own. They're very risky. All investments are very risky. You could lose all or some of your money.
Just take a look at the Camac Energy if you want to see an example.
Yeah, that's a good example of bright red horror. All right, so that looks good.
All right, good. Well, that's a wrap then. We'll be back again next Tuesday.
I look forward to it. I'll
what
see you
do you
then.
Think the market? Wait. Do you think the market's going to do this next week?
First of all, you have options expiration on Friday. Today was very poor volume. I'd be surprised if you see, unless something miraculous happens with economics tomorrow, that you know we'll see a good day tomorrow. Thursday could be kind of rough, and after that, if things don't change, the market still will continue down. My outlook is that the market will continue on a very rocky move until probably the first week of July, which is about 10 days prior to the next earnings season. Mm-hmm. And people will start wanting to square positions and get in there and find out what happens. And then that's going to be the real answer to, you know, are there problems out there or are companies just, you know, so immune to it? That's going to really – and then we either have a nice, you know, giant move back up or it's going to be ugly.
Well, that's – a ways away.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.